It's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
1025.
And welcome into another edition of Preds Insiders here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you on this Monday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Tough weekend for the Predators. They collect one of a possible 4 points over the weekend, losing 4-1 to Florida on Saturday. They fall 3-2 in overtime to the Pittsburgh Penguins, Sidney Crosby and company, on Sunday. So not the results you're looking for there, but sets up a pretty big week this week, beginning tomorrow with San Jose coming into town. We'll get more into that coming up here in just a few minutes, but it has sparked the question. So many guys on the Predators having career years offensively, and yet they find themselves on the fringe of a playoff spot. Is that concerning for David Poile and company as they move forward here? We talked about that this morning on Robbie and Rexroad with myself and Joe Rexroad. Here was that conversation from earlier this morning.
We've had, I think, very brief versions of this conversation before today's show. And I was talking with this about with Darren in the pregame on Saturday against Florida of, all right, look around at the standings. I still feel good about the Predators making the playoffs. I felt better about that before I did this weekend about the Predators making the playoffs. But you look around, and Matt Duchene is lighting it up. He's got a career year. Roman Josi, Philip Forsberg, Tanner Janot. You can go up and down the list of guys that are playing either their career best or close to it. I mean, I don't know that I would necessarily say that this is the best that Ryan Johansson has ever played in his career, but it's pretty good. I mean, it's near there, at least. So there's a lot that you can go up and down the lineup and identify of, man, that guy's playing the best he's ever played. UC Saros, this is his first full season as a starter in an 82-game season. He's been very good for the most part. So there's a lot that's going right for this team. And I think if you would have told Predators fans before the season, hey, Philip Forsberg and Matt Duchene are going to end up around 40 goals. Roman Josi is going to end up around 95, 96, maybe 100 points. We'll see what happens. UC Saros is going to have a .920 save percentage. Where's this team finish? I think most fans would have said, oh, man. Well, they're definitely in the playoffs. Could they challenge Colorado for the division? That's probably would have been my reaction if I would have heard those numbers heading into the season. Those things have happened, and the Predators are in the first wild card spot, and they're holding on to that lead right now by 1 point over Dallas, and they're in the playoffs by a 3-point margin right now. How concerning is that to you that this team, in a lot of ways, from individual production, has gotten just about the most out of it they can probably get, and they're barely in the playoffs, and realistically still, even though I wouldn't pick it, may not make it coming down the stretch?
I just so happened to write a column about this for TheAthletic.com. That's kind of what I was. Let's take these little factoids and condense them and say, here's this. Josi's career year, Duchene's career year, incredible power play. Like you said, Johansson having a great year. Tanner Janot, is right there for rookie of the year. I mean, you can have a nice chunky paragraph about this team and leave out. And like you said, Saros, those are fine. Those numbers are just fine. 255 and a 920? Sure. And I don't know if I'm guessing that they're the one seed, but certainly that they're easily in and probably in really good shape to at least have home ice in the first round of the playoffs. But that's not the case, as we know. And it is kind of – I can't really come up with great answers. We've talked about secondary scoring. That's certainly part of it. I think some of it is just weird losses. It's just too many weird losses. So yesterday on Twitter, someone – and I should have counted them up too. Someone said it was 8 – I don't know exactly what your cut line is, basically just like teams that are out of the playoffs. But that sounds, I guess, about right. Like 8 losses. And of course, you're not going to win all 8 of those games. You're going to lose some bad games. They've won some good ones too. They've beaten a lot of good teams this year. But what if you just had like five losses like that, you know, then it'd be a different situation. So that's part of it. Someone did mention, you know, the power play is so good that it skews a little bit like what these guys are 5-on-5, which I think is probably a fair point, right? They've done so much damage on the power play, which is, again, is like, imagine that.
Yeah.
Thinking
that.
Yeah, I
didn't even mention that heading in. Like, their power play has been top 10 all year.
Right. Yeah, they're number 6, 25%. So, again, you're like, oh, my gosh. But I guess the fact that that's been so good, 5-on-5, it still hasn't been as consistent as you'd like. Although they've been pretty good with the big boys. It's weird. There's not a great explanation for it.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about this with Darren the other day, and I do think some of it is, you know, regardless of who has been on the second line for the most part this year, it's been tough to come by some scoring, and I know that they've split up Forsberg and Duchesne now, and now I guess Duchesne is technically on the second line. Although, I mean, you scored 3 goals over the weekend, so I don't know how long that's going to last. But, you know, I think that's part of it. Like, if it's crazy to say, but like if Tolvanen could have been a little bit better, or Cunnan was a little bit better this year, and I know we're talking about this in the face of everybody else having career years, so not everybody's going to have a career year at the same time. But if they could have given you a little bit more, maybe that makes a difference in a couple of wins coming down the stretch. I do think there have been some weird losses where, you know, they just got – I thought the Buffalo game a couple weeks ago was bad. Like, I thought it was really bad. Like, they've had a few of those this year. But to your point, you're going to have some of those throughout the stretch of a season, regardless of who you are. Like, you know, Tampa, Florida, take your pick. They've had some bad losses coming up down the stretch. So, I don't know. It's interesting because – if you're David Poile and if you're the Predators, you're trying to also forecast what this could mean as you move into the future too. Not even like this year aside, whatever you do in the playoffs, if you make the playoffs, you know, how much damage can this team do? I don't know. But starting to look at next year and into the future, are you going to get the same production out of Duchesne, Forsberg, Josi, and Johansson all at the same time like this ever again? Maybe. But I kind of have my doubts. Like, that's a pretty high bar, what they've established this year. And if you get this production and you don't make the playoffs, like if they come down in the next 10 games and they don't make the playoffs with this level of production, to me that's pretty concerning about this team as they move forward. Because it's like, okay, you can't really ask for much more out of Josi and Duchesne and Forsberg and Johansson than you got this year, and it still wasn't good enough to make the playoffs. What does that tell you about this team?
Imagine if they don't make the playoffs and then lose Forsberg.
Yeah.
It'll be fun around here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. You can't count on it to this level. I don't know that I'd count on it completely falling off.
No.
But you got to have more around that. So that's – and this is another great example, too, of trying to, you know, look at a team going into a season and thinking you have an idea of, like, the parameters and what's going to matter and what's going to count. I mean – I know that I thought for sure Duchesne and Johansson, it's all about them. Like, are they going to respond? Are they going to come on, how many times do we talk about their contracts? Are they gonna play up to their contracts? Yeah, they have like and then some this year. And here we are. Right there on the fringe of making the playoffs. With Josi having a a Hall of Fame season. It's pretty wild.
Well, and the goaltending's been good. I know Saros, the numbers have not been as good since the All-Star break, so there is that. And he was so good in the first half of the season. We were talking about Vezina was on the table.
Like this year he's going to be a finalist.
This year he's going to be a finalist, and I just don't think he is right now as they look at it. So it has fallen off from Saros a little bit. And I think there have been times where defensively it's not been great, but again – you're not going to be perfect throughout the course of a season. I mean, the one thing I said to Darren on Saturday that I have no proof that this affects them beyond just the penalty kill numbers, but they do take a ton of penalties. And I think that
well, – the number one team, penalized team in the league. That's certainly part
of it. That takes you – regardless of whether or not you get scored on, I mean, if you're killing 5 penalties a game, I mean, it just takes you out of your rhythm. And it's
that hurts your 5-on-5.
yeah.
prospects by having to kill penalties.
So I'm not sitting here saying that that's why they've been as inconsistent and that's the reason, but it's just when I was coming up of things that stand out as to how they could possibly be this good individually and be on the fridge like this, that was the one thing that I really came back to. Because other than that, I can't really explain it. Yeah. Like, it's weird.
I think that's certainly a big part of it. Yeah. Too many weird losses. Like, there's a few too many that could be, you know, take four to 6 points right now. You're fine.
Feeling good.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Max Herz from here at 102.5 The Game. Covers the Nashville Predators, also the host of Smashville Live. We'll get his thoughts on some lineup decisions that John Hines could have to make coming up down the stretch. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley here, as always, joined by my good friend Max Herz, who covers the Nashville Predators here at 102.5 The Game, also the host of Smashville Live as well. Max, what's going on, brother? How are we doing?
Hey, Robbie. I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for coming on with us. Lots to get to today here on the program. And check out Max's coverage of the Predators every Preds home game on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max, what did you think of the weekend for the Predators? You get 1 out of 4 points against Florida and Pittsburgh. Obviously, two very good teams in the Eastern Conference, especially in Florida's case. They're the number one team in the Eastern Conference. What did you make overall of the weekend for the Predators and the spot in which they're sitting as they head into play this week?
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting weekend because those are games that you don't mind if they go to overtime. I really thought they were going to find a way to tie up that game Saturday and get it to overtime. And regardless of what happens there, that would have been at least 2 out of 4 points in cross-conference games on the weekend, which, I mean, 2 out of 4 would have been fine. 1 out of 4, which they actually got, is obviously worse. And they had a good chance. They had a 3-on-1 right at the start of overtime to try and win that game against the Penguins. And Philip Forsberg sent a pass across that got knocked down on a really nice defensive play by whichever Penguins defenseman was back there. And, I mean, they were that close to winning both. Roman Josi had a chance at an open net with 8 minutes left in the third period to try and tie that game against the Panthers. They lost that game 2-1. They lost 4-1, but they lost 2-1 with two empty netters. They had a really good 6-on-5 shift with the goalie pulled, nearly got a goal. So I don't think you can complain too much. They matched up well with the Panthers, who had played the night before. Spencer Knight was really good in goal for Florida in that game. And then on Sunday, Sidney Crosby had a great game for the Penguins, and he's not doing that as frequently as he once did, but he can still take over games, and he absolutely owned that game yesterday.
Yeah, there's no question about that. He was awesome. Career point number 1,400 for Sidney Crosby yesterday with the Pittsburgh Penguins, which I know just makes Predators fans listening to this right now very happy. Big fan of Sidney Crosby, most of them from the Stanley Cup Final back in 2017. It's interesting. We were talking about it on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, the spot that they're in right now. You're 1 point up on Dallas. You're 3 points up on Vegas right now. 10 games left in the regular season if you're the Predators. And at this point, like, you want to make the playoffs, and you'll worry about who you're playing in the playoffs after that. I do want to get your thoughts on this that we had to close out Robbie and Rex Road this morning. The Calgary-Colorado thing. A lot of people just say, well, let's take on Calgary in the first round. They're not as good as Colorado, and that's the route the Predators would be most likely to win a series against when the playoffs come around. What do you make of kind of that discussion between the better matchup for the Predators being Colorado or Calgary?
I think Calgary is definitely the better matchup, but I think the point you were making this morning is the right one to make about why it could be the Avs. That would be a less physical series. There would be more room for the Preds skill players to operate. There would likely be more room for Roman Josi to operate in all three zones, which I think is huge for him because a couple weeks ago, AJ Molesko was on Smashville Live, and you've heard her announce games and be Hal Gill's best friend. But yep. I mean, she played in the Olympics, and she played forward and defense at different times in her Olympic, international, and collegiate hockey careers. And she's talking about Josi, basically said, as a former defenseman, I would definitely vote him for the Norris. But her worry with Josi was that once the playoffs come, all the things that he's good at when he has the puck on his stick could go away if they stop calling stick infractions and things like that.
Yep.
And maybe they call penalties in the playoffs this year. Who knows? It's been a while since we've had quote-unquote normal playoffs after a normal season. So maybe they've changed their mind about what they do and don't call. That would be great for a team like the Predators, who need a little bit of that in order to get some goals and get some power plays too to set up chances like that. But I think against the Avs, Josi has a lot more opportunity to carry the puck, and we've seen that in the meetings this season. I mean, one of them was a COVID-altered game, so I don't know how much you can take that one in December, but the most recent meeting in January was wide open.
Yep,
it was 5-4 in overtime. Preds won, and there were a lot of power play goals in that game, too. So that is the type of game that the Preds can win. Obviously, the Flames' top line, looking at their plus-minus, is as good as it gets in NHL history at even strength, led by Johnny Gaudreau, whose plus-minus is in the 50s.
Jeez.
That is wild. But we'll see the Flames twice, too. So we not only have more time, Robbie, as spectators to make our decision, because the Flames will be here a week from tomorrow and then another week after that because of makeup games. They haven't come here at all this year.
Yep.
Those will be the second and third meetings and the only two here in Nashville between the Preds and Flames. So we'll have a chance to see them. And then also, I mean, the Preds could change up seeding with those games. The Preds, of course, can get out of the wild card if they pass the Blues or the Wild, which at times seemed a little more doable than it does right now. But the other part of it is the Flames aren't a lock to win the Pacific Division either.
Sure.
The Kings and Oilers are both still within striking distance of them. The Oilers are within 7 points. Flames have a game at hand, but the Oil has been good recently. We'll see them here on Thursday. But you just can't pick, especially since they changed from 1 through 8 in the whole conference to this terrible system that they use now that I hate. You can't pick. I mean, maybe in the last game you have a little bit of control. But, yeah, once you start, I mean, the team isn't thinking about it at all. There's no possible way for them to choose.
No, I don't think there's any question about that, nor should you. I mean, at this point, if you're the Predators, you need to win as much many games as possible coming down the stretch and get in the playoffs at this point. I don't think there's any question about that. One thing that's interesting to think about as they move forward here, you know, both coming down the stretch in terms of trying to make the playoffs, but in the playoffs as well, what do you do with the lineup? Because they're carrying 12 forwards right now. It's interesting to think about, you know, exactly what those combinations could be. There's a lot of noise about Luke Cunnan right now, and obviously Elli Tolvanen has not had the offensive success that most people envisioned that he could this year. Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, Ryan Johansson have been outstanding. Do you go back to just loading up that top line with those three guys and letting kind of the dust settle from there in terms of what the rest of your lineup looks like? Do you try what they've been doing the last couple of games, and that is splitting up Forsberg and Duchene and maybe adding a little bit more firepower on the second line with Duchene and Granlund as that combo? What do you like? What combination do you like the best, Max, and what do you think the Preds do as they come down the stretch, keeping in mind that they did score a grand total of 3 goals over the weekend against Pittsburgh and Florida?
Yeah, I think they have to stick with what they've used the last 4 games, Robbie, with Tomasino moving not only into the top 6, but on the top line, and Matt Duchene, quote-unquote, moving down within the top 6 from that loaded-up first line with the 3 best forwards on the team and Forsberg, Johansson, and Duchene. They moved Duchene down to play with Granlund, which is a duo that John Hines has not been shy about the fact that he likes them together. He's also liked Granlund with Tolvanen a lot, but that trio so far, really all the production that's come from them has excluded Tolvanen. It's been Granlund and Duchene doing fun stuff together, and they're really good together, but Tolvanen had his looks. He had a chance to tie that game yesterday that I thought he did not take the shot that he should have taken. He wasn't able to get that puck up as high as he wanted. It was a good save by Casey DeSmith going right to left, but it wasn't Tolvanen's best look there, and I just don't know who else would go into the top 6 to replace him. That's the thing. There are 5 really good offensive forwards on this team right now, and I'll include Tomasino in that, but they're missing number 6. So in regards to the top 6, I think you keep it as is. The power play has yielded enough that you don't feel like you're kind of stripping Duchene of his full power, taking him away from Forsberg and Johansson.
Max Herz on with us here on Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Let's expand a little bit more on the Tolvanen part of this, because I think if you're a Predators fan out there, you're wondering, okay, we see the guy and the shot that he can bring to the table. We saw it last year when he got hot. I mean, there was a time last year where he was picking his corners. He was a weapon on the power play.
from the day he stepped foot on the ice here with the Predators, going back to when he was 18 years old, I watched him play. There was a lot that I said, all right, well, that's got to get better. He's got to be better defensively. He's got to get bigger. He's got to get stronger. All the cliche stuff that we say about young guys when they come in the league. But the shot has been NHL ready from the moment he stepped foot on the ice with the Predators. And the production's just not there this year. He's shooting like 6% this year. He's got 9 goals on the season. He's been in a top 6 role a lot this year. I know he spent some time on the fourth line as well, but he spent a lot of time in the top 6 role, a lot of time on the power play as well. Why do you think he hasn't been as productive this year? And at this point, if you're a Predators fan, keep in mind that he is still 22 years old, even though it seems like he's been around forever. What's your concern level with Ellie Tolvanen at this point?
Yeah, and I will say before I say anything, I know, you, like you said, you've been there since Ellie Tolvanen was born. You were in the hospital there in Finland covering
waving,
him.
Yes.
Yeah, just hanging out outside. And I've covered this team the last 2 months, and I'm very happy to hop on the beat mid-season, but I've been covering the team since in-person interview access came back, conducting our post-game interviews. But
oh, yeah.
I've covered every game since then, attended every home game, so I can speak more to these last couple of months than I can the longer term. Obviously, I was here at the station when those type of conversations were happening about Tolvanen. And to me, in recent play, he's looked the best running the point on the second power play, which is kind of weird to think about because those shifts are really never more than 30 to 40 seconds long, and they will get scoring chances in the second unit. The second unit is really good. I really do like the second unit for the Preds power play, but it's almost like he's more comfortable in that role, and I don't know what that says about his offensive zone play, if he's too easy to take the puck from or things like that. Maybe that's it, but he just needs a little bit more time and space, and that just may mean he's a tick behind these other Preds top scorers in terms of the ability to create separation, the ability to get open without the puck in order to generate that separation. I just feel like when that line has been in transition and moved between zones and gone defense to offense, it's not been him. It's been Granlin creating, and whoever that other winger is, whether it's Duchesne, Tomasino, or previously Cunning, trying to get the chances to finish, or a defenseman even jumping in.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great point. And I think that's something that's definitely got to get better from him as they come down the stretch here. And then there's the Luke Cunning part of it too. Michael McCarron goes down with an injury, so he's going to be out. He's week to week right now with an injury. And Luke Cunning has kind of slid down to more of a fourth line role for the Predators. I'm interested to see what happens with him because I've said this from the moment really that he got here. He's not a top six forward to me. And I, you can try to, you know, kind of force that in there as much as you want to, but I don't think he's a top six forward. I think in a perfect world, he's probably a third line guy. Problem is, you feel pretty good about this team's third line, and you're not messing with it. So I'm interested to see, like, what role he carves out for himself as they come down the stretch for it. Because right now, with Cunning, it kind of feels like he's a square peg in a round hole trying to force that in this lineup. That's just my thoughts on it. I know not everybody agrees with that, but that's kind of the way I view Cunning right now.
Yeah, I think I at least mostly agree. And after Ellie Tolvanen was a healthy scratch last Tuesday, it may have only lasted one game anyway, but it had to last one game because Michael McCarron got hurt on a high hit from Matt Dumba and hasn't played since. So they had to bring Tolvanen back in, and I was happy with what John Hines and the coaches did with the lines in that game. If you sit Ellie Tolvanen down and want more chance creation from him, you don't bring him back on the fourth line.
Sure.
And they brought him back on the second line, which I think is the right thing to do because you want to give him a chance to do the thing that you want him to do. I mean, that's kind of obvious to say that, but if you put him on the fourth line, you're not giving him that chance. So Cunning came out of the top six. Tolvanen went into the top six, and also you need someone to center the fourth line without McCarron.
Yep.
So Cousins and Cunning are both capable centers who really have only played wing with the Preds the last couple years. So they're both on the fourth line, kind of co-centering it, and I think Cunning's taken the majority of the draws. But I thought that was the correct move in that lineup situation. And I was going to say since then, but this started actually with the Wild game when Cunning was on the second line. He took 3 minor penalties in that game against his former team. And then on Saturday, he instigated a fight that gave the Florida Panthers a power play because he got an instigator.
Yep.
Plus a 10-minute misconduct as part of that instigator. And I don't have a huge problem with him starting the fight It was in response to a clean hit. But you know what? I think it stopped the Panthers from taking more runs at the Preds. And even though Radko Gudas took care of him in the fight, which is what Radko Gudas does to most people, I don't have too much of a problem with him dropping the gloves. But early in the season, penalty taking was a big, big problem for the Preds. It's been better recently, but he has taken a lot of penalties. So I think that weighs on it too. And I don't know. There are not that many people from Milwaukee who could come up. I think there are fewer realistic call-up candidates than you would think. I don't think Glass is coming. I don't think it's going to happen. But I do think Tommy Novak is an option. And the only place where he would fit is fourth-line center. So yep. I think that could be the move. We haven't really received an update on McCarron. We have no idea. I was going to say don't expect him back tomorrow, but that's not really based off anything. So we haven't heard anything since he got hurt. So... I'm with you on all that, Robbie. I really am. But we'll see if they are going to carry an extra forward anytime soon, because they have three healthy scratch defensemen going with the big club right now and no healthy scratch forwards.
I don't know if I've ever seen that, by the way.
Yeah.
Here in Nashville.
Nine defensemen. I mean, they went through a stretch around the Lozon trade where they played 10 defensemen in five games.
Yeah.
Mostly because of injuries. But they played 10 different defensemen in a five-game span.
It's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Max Herz on here with us here on Preds Insiders. Max, last thing for you here. You brought up Tomasino. I've been pretty encouraged by the way he's played as of late, especially considering that he is a rookie and it's his first full season. I know you look at his numbers and they're not going to blow you off the page or anything like that, but I feel like he's getting better as the season goes on, which is, I think, really difficult to do for a rookie, especially a rookie as young as he is. At 20 years old, to get better as the season goes on. Most of the time, you can see a rookie come out of the gates, maybe really strong, and then by the time game 50, 60, where it comes around, it starts to go the other way because the grind of the season catches up to you. I don't really sense that happening with Tomasino at this point. I think he's getting better, which to me, if you're a Predators fan, that's a pretty darn good sign moving forward.
Yeah, definitely. He has 11 goals and 17 assists, 28 points. In 66 games. He's played in 66 of the 72 games so far this season.
Yep.
And I know those numbers don't sound great, but first and foremost, he's really been on the fourth line a lot.
Yep.
So hasn't been involved in a ton of Ozone time, he plays on the second power play a lot, but not a ton of high potential minutes in terms of goal scoring. And now that he's on a top line, we've already seen him evolve into someone that the Predators trust more, even over the course of 3-4 games. In that first game when he was on the top line last Tuesday, he was getting sheltered a little bit in terms of minutes, specifically with zone starts.
Yep.
When that line had a D-zone start, they would put Duchesne out as the third forward. And part of that is for face-off protection, but it's to prevent Tomasino from getting hemmed in the defensive zone, because that line is, because they're the top line, going to go up against a lot of top lines. So I think that was smart. And over the course of the last four games, we have already seen that happen less. They trust him in those situations. They trust him to start in the defensive zone. And on the offensive side, obviously he's playing with better players. I mean, they were still creating chances when he was with Michael McCarron and Nick Cousins.
Yeah.
And that was a good trio, that's for sure. But Tomasino often, when he would create a chance himself, was the only guy who had a chance to finish it. And we saw earlier in the year, he really struggled finishing high danger and rush type chances. And that shows through in his shooting percentage right now, which is between 6 and 7%, which is really low. And I think it would have been higher if he were in the top group all season. Obviously, the point totals would have been higher, but I think the less attention he receives amongst his line mates, the higher his shooting percentage will be on those same types of chances.
I would agree. And I'm interested to see kind of how he responds here coming down the stretch. Max Herr is our guest here on Preds Insiders. Max, great stuff as always. Appreciate you taking time to be with us.
Of course, Robbie.
We'll come back. We'll take your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders, here on ESPN 1025 The Game, brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here with you on this Monday night here in Nashville, Tennessee. Preds taking on the Sharks coming up tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Puck drop 7 o'clock, pregame 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tough weekend for the Predators, 1 out of 4 points. We talked with Darren McFarland earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road, host of Darren Donick and Chase. Got his thoughts on the Predators and where they sit coming down the stretch here. How many points is it going to take for the Predators to make the playoffs in their next 10 games here? 10 games left, 1 point lead on the Stars heading into play tonight, 3 point lead on Vegas with 1 game in hand. It's going to be tight. Here was Darren McFarland with his thoughts on the Nashville Predators.
So, Darren, what did you think of the weekend for the Predators? Obviously, you only get 1 out of 4 points against 2 very good teams in the Eastern Conference. You're 1 up on Dallas right now, 3 up on Vegas with 10 games left to play. What do you make of the spot they're in as they head down the stretch here?
I wasn't terribly surprised with the weekend, although I will probably take a little bit different approach when I get to Sunday's game. But Saturday, look, Florida, it's no secret. I understand it's still the regular season. They're going to have to do it in the postseason, and they were really, really good last year because, remember, they were in the Predators division, the reconfigured division, and they saw Florida and Tampa and Carolina a ton. And Florida was really good last year. They just unfortunately got Tampa in the first round, and next thing you know, they're one and done. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. They look to be a legit contender. But, you know, Colorado and Florida are going to finish up the 2 best teams in the regular season. I feel pretty good about that, and they deserve it. But still, the question is going to be, what can they do in the postseason play? They haven't done it. Neither one of them have. They both have been good for the last several seasons, and they haven't made that magical run. So that's going to be the storyline behind them once they get into postseason play. And I thought John Hines said it well after the Florida game. I didn't think they played well. By the way, guys, if you'd have told me that was going to be a 2-1 hockey game, I would have – you're talking about that evil laugh I did at the beginning. That's the same thing I would have done, like – or maybe it's in the floor belly laugh. Like, no way. Florida was averaging over 4 goals a game. They score more goals than anybody in the league, and it's really not that close. Colorado's kind of a distant second. I mean – that just puts in perspective how good this Florida team. They're not afraid to get behind. They played from behind all week. They've won 7 in a row. I mean, they got down 5-1 to Toronto and won 7-6 earlier in the week. I think what John Hines was trying to say is, look, you just can't play an even game with Florida. You're going to have to play better than them to beat them. And I'm not trying to put words in John. I mean, in fact, he even used the average word, which I was a little bit surprised, but I thought they played well. Look, if you didn't see the ending, it was not a 4-1 hockey game. It was a 2-1 hockey game with a couple of empty netters. So I really wasn't that surprised. Roman Josi obviously had the big chance. They had chances in the third period. They were all over Spencer Knight in the final 2 minutes. Roman Josi, you know, out of 60 tries, he makes that 59 out of 60 times. See what I did there? And so nice. you don't really look into that too deep. Now, get into the Pittsburgh game. We've now seen Pittsburgh twice in 3.5 weeks. And I'm just going to say this. I thought Nashville outplayed the Penguins. And I think they outplayed them in both games. And I know they got the 4-1 victory here. I'm just going to go on and say this. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I've seen Pittsburgh now twice in 3.5 weeks. I don't think that team's going anywhere in the playoffs. Unless the Eastern Conference is really soft, I don't see that Pittsburgh team going far. They don't really impress me. They don't push back. I don't think they're physical enough. They're too finesse. And, yes, they've still got Crosby and Malkin and Letang and some, you know, Gensel. They got really good players, but I'm not impressed with them. Quite honestly, I thought the Predators should have won that game. I thought they were the better team. And, you know, Pittsburgh had 3 shots in the first period and almost was leading 1-0. If it wasn't for that Duchesne goal late in the first period. I just thought they were the better team for a majority of the game. I'm not that impressed with Pittsburgh. Yes, they got a point. I think in that spot, just me personally, I would have liked to have seen them grab 2. I'm not impressed with the Penguins. They probably should have swept them this season.
So we've been batting this around, Darren. You can take some aspects of this Preds season, certainly Josi's season, Duchesne season, I mean, like the best for both of them they've ever had. Janot, the power play, all these things. You can isolate certain things. And if you put those things together and told me before the year that all this would happen, then I would have expected this team to be in a better place overall. If you had to pick one reason why these career years that we're seeing and how some of the top players in this team are playing like it, but they still aren't having the overall success you might expect, what would you top the list with?
Well, Joe, this was Robbie and I's exact conversation we were having in Patron Platinum Club before pregame. We both got there early. We were sipping on hot tea. We had cheese and crackers. And we were just, reminiscing about things. And this was one of the topics.
It's a great setup.
That we were reminiscing about as we were drinking hot tea with a lemon, although I don't do lemon. Robbie did. And having cheese and crackers. If any of us were told, just think about this. This is what I said to Robbie. If we were told before the season began that Philip Forsberg was going to have 40 goals, because I still believe he's going to have 40 goals. Matt Duchene was going to have a career year, and you could probably throw in he's going to get to 40 goals as well. Tanner Janot is, you can make a case, should be the rookie of the year. I think he's going to get snubbed, but he's going to maybe break the rookie record. Roman Josi is going to have the best season a Predators player has ever had in franchise history. This team's power play was going to be a top 10 power play unit the entire year. And UC Saros was just going to be UC Saros. What do you think our predictions would have been for this team if we would have known that before the season began? Do you think anyone in their right mind would have said, yeah, that means they'll probably be hanging on for dear life just to secure a playoff spot? No. No one would have said that. But I told Robbie, I was like, I probably would have said, geez, with all that being said, they may win the division, right? I mean, that's the way. If you would have told me that back before they played a game, all that was going to play out the season. And, oh, by the way, they're going to be a physical team, because I said it. I was like, back before they kind of reconstruct this roster, I was like, this team is baby poop soft. They've got to get tougher. They get pushed around way too much. That hasn't been the case at all, as we know. Got more fighting majors, more hits, more. They are a very, very physical team. How could any of us have predicted anything other than they would be safely in going into game 73 tomorrow night, right? Or am I wrong? Does anybody think differently?
You're right. I think everyone would have said that, or very close to everyone.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you could have thought differently, but here we sit. So to answer your question that I didn't answer, I don't know. I don't know how this team is still going to have to fight all the way to the end with all of that being said.
Darren McFarland on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road from Darren Donick and Chase. So, Darren, with that being said, how concerning is that to you if you're David Poile? Of all these things have gone right. And look, they've still got some hockey to play this year. I think they're going to make the playoffs. We'll see what they can do once playoffs come around. But if you're getting these career years out of everybody, and this is the end result where you're still a wild card team, is that concerning to you if you're David Poile?
And, oh, by the way, Dallas is 1 point behind you with the same amount of games remaining.
Yep.
And Vegas just got Max Pacioretty back, and they're only 2 points out from the final spot, 3 points out from your spot. I mean, look, it's a very interesting conversation. I would not to sidestep it or to avoid it, because I do think it's a relevant topic. How about let's see how it plays out, right? Because if they go on a magical run, then this is all for naught. I mean, it's like, oh, well, that's what happens whenever you have all that production and you do all that in a season. It pays off for you, but let's kind of see how it plays out, and then let's revisit, because I think we do kind of need to see the final body of work before we comment on it, because we've seen teams just get in. The Predators did it. Others have done it. Just get in and then make that run. Is this team – I still believe this team is equipped to go on the run. I really do. They are equipped to be a player. Like I said, I don't think Pittsburgh is. Now, maybe they'll prove me wrong. I don't think they're equipped for postseason play. I think this Predators team is equipped. Now we'll just see what happens.
What would you say – would be required to feel good? Like, right now there's 20 possible points out there for the Preds. What's safe?
Typically, it's around the 95, 96 mark to feel safe that you're going to get in, or maybe not safe. That's the number you need to get to. I think this year, obviously, the way it's played out, it's going to take a little bit more. So if you're going to use the safe word, Joe, I think you better get to about 98. So they need about 11 more points with 10 remaining.
Yeah.
I'd say about 98. If you're going to use the word safe, I think 98 gets you in.
Yeah, very rarely has a 98-point team not been in the
right.
postseason.
Yeah. I don't know the numbers, but you're right. It's rare that you don't get in with 98 points. So I think that's the safe number.
Thanks to Darren McFarland for joining us here on the show. Coming up next, we'll look ahead at the week ahead for the Nashville Predators. Big games coming up this week. Edmonton, Chicago, St. Louis, all on the schedule. San Jose kicks it all off coming up tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. We'll do that next. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Preds Insiders, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Looking ahead at the week to come for the Predators. San Jose coming up tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. A 5-game homestand over this next week and a half for the Predators. So you got San Jose tomorrow. Edmonton, Connor McDavid and company coming in on Thursday. They've been red hot as of late. Chicago on Saturday, an 11:30 start on Saturday, and then a back-to-back at home. Chicago Saturday, St. Louis coming up on Sunday at 5 o'clock on Easter Sunday before closing out next week with Calgary to close out the five-game home streak. So lots of action coming their way for the Predators in a short amount of time and some important games coming up down the stretch here. The Edmonton game, I mean, you look at the standings heading into play tonight. Edmonton has been surging as of late. They're now in second in the Pacific Division, just 7 points behind Calgary. Firmly in a playoff spot at the moment. Connor McDavid has just been ridiculous as of late. Leon Draisaitl playing very well as well. And the Oilers have been getting some saves lately too, which if you've watched them play over the last few years, that's been their problem, especially when it comes to the playoffs, is not having very good goaltending at inopportune times. So Edmonton playing very well. The schedule, we talked about this last week, is daunting for the Predators when you factor in quality of opponent. I mean, they just played Florida and Pittsburgh, two very good teams in the Eastern Conference. They've got games against Edmonton and St. Louis and Calgary twice and Minnesota and Colorado, Tampa Bay, all these really good teams that you want to throw out there. The good news is the 5-game homestand starts tomorrow against San Jose. So if you're the Predators, you're not having to travel right now, you've got 5 games in a row at home, you can take care of business, especially this week, as you look at San Jose, Edmonton, and Chicago. If you can win those three, you're going to put yourself in a really good spot. I think you've got to beat San Jose and Chicago. I mean, those are two teams that are down in the standings. I know that they've struggled against those type of teams as of late, but you've got to find a way to win those games if you're the Predators, regardless of how it looks, whether it's pretty, it's ugly. I don't care. Just find a way to get the 2 points. And then I think it's going to be an interesting showdown coming up on Thursday against Edmonton. But you're at home. You have to like your chances in these games at home, even though some of the quality of competition is going to be good. Like, do I expect the Predators to just sweep this homestand and win all five? No, I don't. They're probably not going to win all five. If you could get 3 out of 5, I think you're feeling pretty good. If you could get 4 out of 5, you're feeling great. You're going to be in a good spot at the end of that if you're the Predators and you win 4 out of these next 5 games. So that's a tall task. That's a big order for the Predators that they got to find a way to accomplish moving forward. But it starts tomorrow night. We talked about this on Robbie and Retro this morning. There have been too many times this year where lower-level teams, teams below you in the standings, have come in and they've played well and they've stolen points from you. And you just can't let that happen if you're the Predators this week. The games are too close. You know, the standings are too close. It's just going to be too tight coming down the stretch to give away some of these games like San Jose and like Chicago coming up this week. Dallas, I thought, had a really bad loss over the weekend. They dropped one to New Jersey. They rebounded from that and beat Chicago last night. But you can't help out Dallas. You can't help out Vegas by losing some of these games that you have no business losing. So if you're the Predators, that's your task starting tomorrow against San Jose. You've got to find a way to take care of the business that is in front of you, and it's about getting back to your game. I like a lot of what the Predators have done lately. I thought they were okay against Florida. I thought they played better against Pittsburgh, but the results just weren't there. I'm interested to see what the lineup looks like tomorrow. We talked about this with Max Herz earlier in the show. We talked about this, you know, throughout the show of what is the ideal lineup if you're the Predators. Do you put the big line back together with Duchesne and Forsberg and Johansson? Do you like having your scoring spread out a little bit more? That sounds great in theory, but you got to score. They had 3 goals combined over the weekend. So I'm interested to see how John Hines approaches this as they come down the stretch, and whether or not somebody that's, you know, whether it's Tolvanen or Cunning or whoever that has been maybe dried up a little bit offensively lately, can they find a way to get hot again and help with the secondary scoring? Because you can never have too much secondary scoring. I think we've learned that quite a bit here in the last few years. That's going to do it for us today here on Preds Insiders. Tune in tomorrow for the game against the Sharks. Puck drop 7 o'clock, pregame 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. You've been listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.